Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Feeling lucky? You should be. Meet the new Lucky One Sweet Tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients in a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
That is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my new friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again! Say what again! I dare you! I double dare you, motherfucker! Say what one more goddamn time!
What? We've got here is failure to communicate.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
You get our son.
Happy birthday, Polly.
Oh, no, I got me some. Well, I'm the Joker, baby.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 263. Jeff Lowe and Jack Trill-Ballins. We got a sports-themed episode, kind of, sort of. We're doing Friday Night Lights, reviewing the movie Friday Night Lights from 2004. And we're also going to do another draft, worst TV slash movie athletes. Worst TV slash movie athletes. I liked a lot of the submissions. I'm very confident in my team. And then I'm confident that my players won't get picked. So I hope but then again, I did lose Leo from growing pains to Trill a few weeks ago. So you just never know. You never know. That's why you take your guy. You take your guy when you think you need to take him. We also, more importantly, we do have an interview with Josh Gad, the man himself. Josh Gad, Ken Jack did the horny Olaf voice for him. We explained
it.
More than just a good sport. He was just awesome. We were a little concerned about doing it only because, like, that is his, like,
the voicemail. He obviously has a lot of attachment to the character.
Right.
And obviously Disney's still writing his checks in a big way.
Yeah. And I'm going to say,
they write our checks too. So
maybe down the road, if we interview him again, we'll give him, like, horny lines to read. Somebody, I had a couple people ask that. Did you give him a lot? There's no chance he would have read horny.
No way.
That's like saying, hey, will you do this one bit for us so you make no more of this? Tons of money.
That has zero incentive to do whatsoever.
Imagine the People article today. It's like Josh Gad was fired after appearing on a podcast where he said,
"Let me know your feet, Elsa." Yeah,
fired from everything.
Elsa, let me just take it off. Let me smell your gym shorts.
So we talked about that for a little, but he talked about all his like insane future projects: Honey, I Shrunk the Kids sequel. He gave us a lot of some good nuggets that we're gonna throw up on our social media, get some clicks.
That's good.
Very funny dude.
Yeah.
Very funny dude.
Yeah. So
that's the classic. You interview a person, and then I don't think we ever made fun of Josh Gad. We always were like, I think it was more the casting decisions around like
right.
Josh Gad,
which we talk about as well with him.
Yeah.
How ridiculous.
Like Hollywood with him.
Hollywood's like, oh, we need a particular guy. It's Josh Gad right now.
There's a moment
we talked to him about.
Yeah, there's a moment we interviewed people where you're like, all right, at what point can we make like can we do the funny stuff without being like, is this going to derail it? And it's usually it's when they go, can I swear? And then when they ask that question, because he did, you're like, yeah, and it's just it all turns in there. It's like the moment we talked to Ravel and he turned his hat around backwards. That's when
been 10 centuries ago.
That's when you know he locked in. We'll get to that in a second. What's happening other than that? Anything we're watching or do I actually I don't I haven't even watched since.
Since I've gotten HBO Go, or HBO Max, rather, shout out to our boy HBO Max, the first thing I watched is Impractical Jokers, and I've been crying laughing at it for like the last like 2-3 days. It is still so funny to me, and I know it's so stupid and brainless, but I love it so much, and I'm not ashamed of that.
Have you watched The Misery Index on TBS with host Jamila Jamil?
No.
I haven't watched that either, but I see, because I've been running the Friends Gauntlet on TBS, I see that ad a lot. And you know what else I've been watching? American Dad comes on after Friends.
So funny.
And I never realized, I always enjoyed it, but I never realized how fucking funny the show was. It's not like Family Guy isn't funny, but Family Guy has a style. Like American Dad has their own style, even though they both were created by the same person and voiced heavily by the same person. They're very different shows.
I think American Dad, and this might be a controversial take, I think American Dad is pound for pound funnier than Family Guy. Family Guy is way more culturally iconic and way more important to the cultural lexicon of America. But I find every episode of American Dad, I'm guaranteed way more laughs than any given episode of Family Guy. And that's, again, not shitting on Family Guy. Family Guy is an American institution, but whatever.
No, I agree. I mean, American Dad's a lot darker without being mean-spirited. And there's a lot of mean-spirited stuff, especially in the, you know, first seasons of Family Guy, which I found funny, but, you know, you're rewatching later and you're kind of like, well, you know, I was always like, would that fly today? Some of the stuff probably wouldn't, but that's also why it was kind of funny back in 2003 when you're watching it from a dorm room and you're an 18-year-old kid, right? But American Dad's been on the air for 15 years, which is
crazy, right?
Crazy to think about, like Family Guy 20, American Dad 15. It's nuts how long they've been on, and there's like 17 seasons of American Dad, and there's a lot of episodes that I need to actually, I'll never get caught up on. But
the punchline's never like a digression or whatever, which obviously I guess some people it's complaining about with Family.
The cutaway, you mean?
Yeah, it's never the punchline is almost never like that in American Dad. The punchline is just like part of the storyline or whatever it is you want to call it. But the show is so funny to me. I still rewatch it on Hulu very frequently.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, the punchline or the cutaway jokes. I mean, that's like, I know Family Guy gets a lot of like crap for it, but I guess it works, obviously. Was its own thing, yeah.
Well, but at the time, it's like when anything's on the air for 20 years, it's really easy to criticize. Mm-hmm. But at the time, it was fucking funny.
Like, and still, if I watch back those episodes from when I liked Family Guy, I would still laugh. Mm-hmm. They're still fun. I mean, it's still funny. Just, you know, humor. We all like the Big Bang Theory now. Humor changes. We liked Friends 20 years ago, and now we all like the Big Bang Theory.
I was watching some Big Bang Theory last night, and I was shocked because I think they started airing some of the later seasons on TBS, how, like, it's funny, the characters were babies when they started, and now, like, by the end of it, you could tell, like, you know, Jim Parsons is a 40-year-old man dressing up like a 17-year-old. Just give me the fuck off this show.
Getting $1 million an episode.
$20 million an episode.
I'm going to need some more emphasis on the bazinga there, Jim.
Break out the Green Lantern shirt from the CBS wardrobe department.
Like, just doing a rail. Just in his studio, is in his fucking trailer, like Leo in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Like, fucking didn't get that bazinga right, god damn it! It just pops off a rail of CBD, allegedly. You know,
it was really weird one time. I was, back when I had like Sirius XM, I was really, really into that. I mean, like, I guess I still have it, but I don't really like listen to it as much because my commute's not as long. But I was like on one of the politics channels, and Jim Parsons had a show on it. And it was like Jim Parsons talking politics or something. It was the weirdest thing. I had to like pull over to the side of the road and Google it. Apparently, yeah. They
what's it called?
I think it was like on the E channel. It was like Jim Parsons had a show that he talked about politics. I don't know what it was called, but I don't think it exists any longer. I think in 2015, Jim Parsons could tackle politics. In 2020, I don't think Jim Parsons can tackle politics on air.
Yeah, agreed.
Maybe he can. I don't know.
He's the bazinga man. Him and Galecki and the whole
thing.
Crew.
We're going to talk about it when we talk about Josh Gad. Do the thing. You know, Chadwick Boseman, do the Wakanda Forever. Josh Gad, do the voice. Jim Parsons, say the thing.
Just looking at Jim Parsons, I feel like anytime someone's asked him, hey, say bazinga, he's never said yes.
Do you think Josh Gad has Trey Parker and Matt Stone like in a group chat?
The way he talks about him, it sounds like they're still, you know.
Oh, man.
Sound like friends.
That'd be funny.
We get in the Book of Mormon as well. We talk about that, why that's never been a movie and what would happen if it would be. We didn't ask him this because it's – I wouldn't ask him this. And I'm not saying the person who asked is an idiot, but come on, common sense. Somebody asked him, like, not long ago, like, oh, would you reprise your role in the Book of Mormon movie? It's like, what? It's like – I mean, he's an older man now. It's like he's very clearly old. Like, he can't portray the younger kid anymore. I don't think that would quite work out too well.
I was listening to the I Believe song from the Book of Mormon, the classic song from the Book of Mormon. I wonder if they changed the name of Thomas Monson to the new president of the LDS Church. And like,
they've updated. I know that show, they've updated a lot of lyrics and stuff over the years, so I would imagine
they probably do. Yeah. Be kind of clever. I don't know.
That soundtrack, it's good if you've never seen the show. It's just very funny. It's very – I Believe is probably the funniest one. I think Andrew Rannells performed it at the Tonys, and it's on YouTube.
Yeah, very good. I've also been playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey, fellas.
You like it?
Yeah. I like it. I bought it for $15 on the old Xbox game store.
$15 already?
Yeah, it's been out like 2 years. Came out right tomorrow. Before Red Dead, I think.
Tomorrow, big news coming out about video games.
Oh, PlayStation 5.
I actually thought it was today, and I'm bummed because now we're not going to talk about it till Sunday. But I'm excited for the event tomorrow. I mean, look, I'm sure Ken Jack will like it too, but folks know me and Trill, we love fucking reveal events for tech. Oh, eat that slop up. Though that's usually us with Apple, so I know Kendrick will get in just as much now with PS4, I imagine. I'm pumped. Like, I'm excited to see what they reveal. I mean, I guess we've seen the controller, but, like, what am I – like, the one I'll never forget, not the PS4, not the Xbox One, it's the 360. I don't know if it was E3 or if it was the Xbox or PS reveal event for PS3, but the Madden Next Gen trailer that they had. They had this crazy Madden Next Gen. You're like, what the this is what video games are going to look like? And then Madden Next Gen is one of the worst sports games ever made. Like, they looked like big, block, like bulky, blocky dudes. And it was supposed to be this crazy-ass thing. That's what whenever I think of, like, video game reveals or, like, systems, I'll think of that Madden Next Gen. That shit sucked. Donovan McNabb on the cover.
What titles came out with Xbox, though? Because I remember Call of Duty 2 being the big one, right? What else came out with it?
Nothing. There really isn't ever a killer app that gets launched on a new system unless it's Nintendo these days.
That's true.
It doesn't, because the problem I think for developers is that when you think about it, like, you're developing a game for 3 years and you want to get it out, but then, like, at the same time, it's like Sony's trying to come up with the PlayStation 5. So I know they get development kits early, but you got this like weird time between, I want to get my game out and finished as soon as possible. And there's really no incentive to, like, I don't know. I don't think it ever really lines up. So, like, what do you end up happening is, like, exactly what Jeff's saying, is when that Donovan McNabb Madden gets released on the PlayStation 2, but then it gets released on the PlayStation 3, but it's a shit version of the game with barely any features. Like, they didn't put any effort into it other than just kind of porting the graphics up.
Well, back then, they didn't really use gameplay footage either. They would just show the cutscenes and be like, yeah, this is what games are going to be like. And they're just not even close to whatever it was going to be. And
well, I remember it looked better, but it didn't have any of the franchise features or anything like that. It was a very bare-bones game.
Yeah, Madden 05 was like the barest-bones sports game ever released. The players looked terrible. It was clunky. It was a bad game.
Was that 05 or 06?
It was 05. It was 05, because I won't get into why I remember that. But I remember
it was McNabb, I thought it was 06. Wasn't McNabb 06?
Maybe it might have been 06. It might have been 06. Yeah, it was okay, because 05 was Ray Lewis, right? Was the hit
set. Yeah.
Okay, so then it was okay, 06. Who? Because Madden 06 for non-next gen was apparently a really good game. I don't know, because I got the Xbox 360 thinking I was going to get the greatest Madden of all time, and it was ass.
Yeah.
It was an ass game. Here's my question. I know they've released some, like, next gen sports stuff, but is this going to be the, like, because the leap from the PS2 to the PS3 was pretty crazy, right? With sports graphics. Mm. The leap from the PS3 to the PS4 was, it wasn't insane, but it was pretty fucking big. Like, it really looked good. do you think, I don't know if we're going to see that crazy of a leap with like sports games or even just graphics in general. Like, I think the more like the first person shit and like your Assassin's Creed, those types of games, like, I think that'll look better. But sports games, I don't know how the leap is going
to
look.
I think like Assassin's Creed and those, they can look a certain way because they don't need to look specifically real. I think with football games and sports games in general, a lot of that just has to do with like motion graphics and like how people move to make sure they look human and don't look fucked up and don't have all those issues that, like, you know, like they always post those clips on Madden of like a guy like falling down, looking like he's humping another dude's face or whatever, all that shit. Being able to fix all those like little like glitches, I think, is how you make everything look more realistic. And then that's like the kind of the curse of sports games.
Well, but also they still can't make running look good in a Madden game.
Yeah.
But yet they can make running look good in Red Dead Redemption, which I don't or really Assassin's get. Creed even. Assassin's Creed. I mean, I don't get why like Madden looks so unnatural, but it's not the graphics and the animation on the sports game. It almost seems we're getting to the point where there's diminishing returns on just like the really obvious graphic improvements. And now it's just getting it to the point where the graphic improvements are like around shading and they're really subtle. And it's about, you know, 120 frames per second and all that stuff. But the real issue is going to be, I think at some point you're constrained by the immersion through your inputs. And that's where sports games like Madden, I think, really have gotten stale, is because there's only so much you can do on a 100-yard football field with a PlayStation controller to make the gameplay feel fresh and exciting, which they haven't been able to. I mean, they've innovated it on somewhat, but they've never really. It's boring now. It's Madden's fucking boring. It's boring. It's the same game. There's quality of life improvements, but it's the same shit you've been playing for 15 years.
I can't think of a sports game or even a franchise really in general where it's gotten specifically better beyond the point of being like a slight graphics and also roster update. I can't think of a franchise over the last 5 years where I'm like, this game has definitively gotten better with each edition.
Well, I think FIFA did to a certain point, but I don't think FIFA's like that.
FIFA 20 great. And FIFA 19 are the same thing. Like the same game.
Yeah, that which is. But I will say, up until 20, I did. I agree with you, but up until 20, I felt like FIFA. Oh, I was like, oh, okay, so I like this more than last time. And now I was like, oh well, fuck, I just paid the same. That's the same game.
Mm-hmm. Well, the benefit I also get from FIFA is I didn't really start playing FIFA till like FIFA 10, whereas I've been playing Madden since I was whatever. So I think I just got tired of FIFA the same way I got tired of Madden. But more than anything, with the sports games, I think what this generation is, you're going to see more of the other big tech breakthrough is the solid state drive, which is going to change a lot of times, but games as service, which they've already started to do in like a lot of these 2K things with the credits, but then also like the Maddens and the FIFA has been designed around like the ultimate teams or whatever, or like the collecting the cards and building your own team, which I just don't give a fuck about.
Not
I don't
even
care.
Nope.
But that's where they're going to make their. That's where they're going to make their money now. So I will see. Like EA, I do imagine at some point EA will get rid of the yearly. You actually have to buy the game and just transition into an update model. As long as they can get that revenue back through like whatever they're doing with the cards and the DLCs or the whatevers.
I fucking hate it. I mean, that's why ESPN NFL 2K5 was so great. It was so custom. First of all, animations were ahead of its time, and they're still better than most of the Madden animations. And the shit you could do even like with a receiver. Go look up YouTube videos. It's like the comparisons between NFL 2K5 and Madden 20. It's unbelievable how much better that shit still is now. But that's why people want NCAA back. That's why fucking Big Cat is streaming to it. I mean, it's also because he's Big Cat. But like NCAA is still an intriguing game people like. Like people love that game. That's why 100,000 people watched him play it the other night, because there's still like that nostalgia for it, because NCAA was very deep. You could do more. It was more than a sick, you know, you could customize schedules, conferences. They had that team builder shit. You could throw Trill's face on a fucking team online, and then it's in your game seconds later. Like, you could do so much with that, and that's just gone. Recruiting, all of that, yeah.
The atmosphere of an NCAA game where, I mean – You got the fight songs for the schools. It's more personality. There's more stuff to go around versus something like Madden, which all NFL stadiums fucking look the same now. They're all of the same shiny inside silver look with the glass roof or whatever. Like it doesn't matter with Madden. I know everyone hates it. This isn't a fresh take, but that's the curse of like now we're getting to PlayStation 5, but the games we want, we're not going to get. We're not going to get NCAA. We're not going to get like the next gen games we want for 2 years. We're not going to do a Horizon Zero Dawn when like only 7 people have the PlayStation 5 after release. So you got to wait another year to get that games you actually want, which is what like the launches are super funny because what there'll be like one game come out, maybe it'll be okay. But like it used to be the system's coming out. Oh, you're getting a new Mario and that's going to sell the system.
Yeah.
It's just not really. It's not there for the PlayStations and the Xbox.
I'm trying to think of what came out with Xbox, and the one thing that comes to mind is Call of Duty 2. I remember being the big one, and I think there was a Western game. It wasn't one of the
like
Red
Xbox,
Dead.
Xbox?
Xbox 360, 360, yeah.
Okay, did 360 have a Halo at launch?
No.
I don't think so.
Halo 3 was like next year, I think.
It's next year.
Yeah, it was a little ways after, because I was in high school, and I was a little ways after. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, and like probably all the sports games came out in that same year too. Did any of the golf games get better? Because I don't play any golf games, so I don't know.
They did.
And then they stopped.
Well, the golf. Yeah. Well, the golf games were always like they kept people with blue balls in the golf games because it's like this is the year we're going to get Augusta. I know it. And then they got Augusta, and then people got you know whatever.
That was pretty fucking awesome when they gave Augusta. Yeah. That was one of the coolest shit in like any sports video game. That was kind of surreal. Yeah,
it was pretty neat. It was neat. I mean, obviously, because I'm never going to play Augusta, so it was nice to play it a digital format.
What's the one you know? It is. What's the golf game people play right now? The clubhouse.
Oh, fuck! No I should idea, know man.
It. It's called the country club or something. It's a popular sport. It's a popular golf game. People design courses, and there's like a legitimate, authentic Augusta, and that's what people say, like 2K is in a model. I don't know the exact details, so don't fucking yell at me for listening to this right now. But
That sounds fun. I kind of want to get into that. Is that like a PlayStation thing?
Go look it
like
up.
iOS.
I'll look it up. No. It's like either console or PC.
Waylay Country Club True Golf Classics. I don't think this is because it's for Nintendo 64. I may have messed up.
That's probably not it. The Golf Club 2019 is what it's called. The Golf Club. Yeah. It's been out for a while now, but people it may have something to do with the new PGA Tour game. Anyway, we're straying off. One more on launch titles. Oof, you can't forget the Indianapolis Colts were heavily featured on this Xbox sports launch title.
Oh, the Peyton Manning football game.
NFL Fever, baby. NFL Fever.
I remember just the worst, like, photo of Peyton Manning ever. I think he's like just standing
CGI. It wasn't even really Peyton Manning. It was like a computer generated. Like
I don't remember that.
Not
I just
even
remember
throwing a ball. It was like just him standing there.
Actually, I think the Xbox one, it was like a quarterback sneak. The classic Peyton Manning move. I got to get the cover of it. It was really funny though. We'll talk more about it. Well, yeah, it's Peyton Manning rushing the football. It's him running the football against the Miami Dolphins. I'm sending it to you right now. The Xbox, it had only on Xbox. It was a launch title for the regular Xbox. I don't know the launch title he was throwing. But anyway, the year after they came out with NFL Fever 2003, and it's Peyton Manning running up the middle, tucking the football in under his right shoulder. Unbelievable. If you think Peyton Manning, you think taking it up the gut.
This is like a John Kincaid painting too. It's like a painting. It's very bizarre. Very weird.
Peyton Manning classic running over Jason Taylor moment. Yeah, happens so often.
Peyton Manning hitting the truck stick with that those gigantic Peyton Manning quads.
Yep. Oh, those massive legs.
But there was another NFL Fever where it was Peyton stanced up sitting there with the football.
Okay.
Yeah.
The first one he was throwing, and then they're like, well, we had him throwing 1 year. What does he do next year? Okay.
I'm looking through the titles now. Oh my God. Some of these other cover athletes on this game, I did not even oh my God. Dante Culpepper was on one of these? No way.
Culpepper was on Madden.
He was on Madden.
It was like 2004.
Yeah, I love that game. Yeah.
No, 2002.
It was 02.
Is that Mark Brunell?
Burnell was on a cover. He was on a cover NFL Fever.
NFL Fever 2000.
The Mark Brunell, did you ever see that like crying screen cap of Mark Brunell? Like where he was getting fired up about something. I forget it, but
it was over something really stupid. I remember that much. It was the dumbest thing he got sad about.
But it's one of my favorite screen caps of all time. It was over the deflated balls.
Yeah, that was it. That was it. Why would you cry over that?
I don't know.
Oh my god! I just found another one of Peyton, a different, like an alternate. I guess it's an alternate cover. It's him stiff arming Jason Taylor.
Oh, let's go!
I'm a Colts fan. I'm gonna be a Colts fan. I'm a giant Peyton Manning fan. I mean, my teen years were just spent rooting for that guy. But I will never understand how he became such a renowned and successful pitch man for everything. Yes. And I do think he's kind of funny, but I don't really get it.
He's funny in doses. Him being like this, like exposed to me is weird.
I don't know. It's fine. Peyton, come on the pod. You do the nationwide jingle. I don't give a shit.
All right. We went on a bit of a tangent there, but we'll talk more about it Sunday. I'm curious. We may have both take, like, they may show sports games for the PS5 and we might be blown away. We'll see. I probably won't buy them. I play one game now.
So. They're going to show off like some tech demo of somebody flying, and then there's going to be another game that's going to be Leisure Suit Larry.
Yep.
And
the
hot coffee mod for GTA in next
year. Yes.
Barstool launched an esports team and
let's fucking go.
I helped write some fun facts for their player cards. And for Glennie, our good friend, if you don't know Barstool, good friend Glennie Balls, Balls man himself, Miles Teller's favorite person at our company. I put on his fact, I said that he's oddly good at Leisure Suit Larry. And Glennie didn't know what it was, and he just tweeted, "I do not know what Leisure Suit Larry is, but I'll go with it." Little does he know.
Oh, boy.
The greatest character there is. The greatest video game sex ever, Leisure Suit Larry.
Professional athlete, Glennie Balls.
That's true.
Professional esports athlete.
Respect on his name.
I think that will do well. I mean, there's a bunch of good people out there wanting to get signed by somebody. So figure it out. Make those signings, though, because if you're just four people, you're a clan.
That's true.
That's not shade. I'm just saying you gotta sign people.
It's true.
Like exactly. Me. Big names.
Sign
I'll
TV.
I'll do Casey Powell.
Sign away FaZe Banks.
All right. We gotta get into podcast. Roman. It's a Roman ad. Got an ad for Roman here. We've been dealing with acne, redness, dark spots, wrinkles. Finding treatment that works can be complicated. Need skincare that actually performs, but getting started can be overwhelming. Thankfully, folks, we do have a solution for you, and it's because of Roman. Roman makes it convenient to get customized prescription skincare that really performs. Grab your phone or your computer, complete a free online consultation, and you'll hear back from a U.S. licensed physician within 24 hours. If appropriate, a doctor will prescribe a custom blended treatment based on your skin type and priorities. You'll receive your custom skincare treatment with free two-day shipping. You also get free unlimited follow-ups with your doctor if you need to make a change to your treatment or have any questions. With Roman, there are no commitments, and you can cancel any time. Go to GetRoman.com/BarstoolOffer for a free online visit and start your new skincare routine today. That's GetRoman.com/BarstoolOffer. Eligibility requirements and additional terms do apply. All right, four pieces of news today. Two trailers. One making some news, making some waves. Bill and Ted. Bill and Ted Face the Music. The third Bill and Ted movie is coming out. It's going to be released August 21st, 2020. Did they say VOD things on this?
In theaters? I don't know.
Yeah.
I was watching this and it felt like the perfect VOD movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It looks like theaters.
Yeah. We're opening the Cinemark back up with Bill and Ted, and then we're following it with the Croods too.
Now and during
three.
The monotony of middle-aged life, Bill and Ted are warned by a visitor from the future of the need for them to create a song in 78 minutes that will save all life on Earth and the entire universe. The pair work with their families, old friends, famous musicians, and each other to help complete the task.
It looks like shit. I know you're going to be diplomatic about it, and I love Keanu.
Well, I was going to say it looks whatever.
I want to be polite about it because Keanu deserves that. He doesn't deserve me saying his movie looks like shit, but I honestly, it looks like shit. There's no other way to describe it. It looks terrible.
Force me to make a choice saying this will be good or dog shit. I will say it'll be dog shit. Like if I had to pick one or the other, I would not pick the good side.
You got to admit, it looks ambitious at the very least.
It's very ambitious. Time travel story, again, bring back the time travel plot. Maybe we'll throw the Grim Reaper back in the mix. The thing I have to look forward to is there's going to be cameos. There's got to be cameos.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's gonna hinge on how enjoyable the cameos are from the just a pure that's that person standpoint. But other than that, it's like I hated this. I hated it.
You don't
I'm not a big Bill and Ted thing, and I like the concept when I'm going because I'm when we were going through and I'm all for nostalgia. But this feels so hollow. It feels so empty. It feels like a parody. It feels like something that would air before Tropic Thunder, as just making fun of a fucking dragging out properties from the 80s and 90s back again.
I like your cameo comment only because this does feel like the combination of him and Alex Winter again, like something you would see before like the Kids' Choice Award or some stupid, like an award show or something. No. You put them together and you're like, oh shit, there's Winter and Keanu back together again. That's cool.
It feels like a cameo video from the app. Like you asked Alex Winter and Keanu to do a cameo at Bill and Ted.
And that's what they're – I don't know if you remember this, but the video that they put out to announce that they were doing this movie literally looked like a cameo because it was just a guy filming them just saying, hey, what's up? It's us and we're doing Bill and Ted 3. Sick, right? But I think the problem I'm having with this right now is – and there's nothing to strike against Keanu. I just don't like to look at him without a beard anymore. It really haunts me seeing him without a beard, and I don't like it at all.
Yeah, it's like it's like when you're playing a video game, going back to the video game talk, and your character clips or something, and it looks distorted. That's what Keanu looks like without a beard. Not saying he looks distorted, just doesn't look right.
It looks like do you ever see that one picture of someone like photoshopped the beard from Zeus and Hercules off? Like the beard and hair off of him, that's what it looked like to me. Like it looked like just wrong.
It's got the same smooth face Alan Rickman vibe.
Yes, I just don't like it. I sent you guys a picture of what I was talking about. Yes, major rest in peace.
I don't know how I was going to put it. I don't know. I give up. You eviscerated it enough. I just give up.
I'm not trying to eviscerate it. I hope it's good. I am never. There's only a few movies that I'm actively rooting for to fail, but I'm not going to stand here and lie to you, the audience, and say I'm excited for this Bill and Ted movie that looks like shit from this trailer that looks like shit.
Jeff, clip this in post and just leave the part where it said, I am excited for this Bill and Ted movie. Clip out the part where it said, I am not.
just cut up everything I've said from that and just be like, I am excited for Bill and Ted. I am horny for Ted and Bill and want them in my mouth. Whoa, Trill.
Whoa. Jeez. All right, that's that movie. How about You Should Have Left from Blumhouse? This is going VOD next week, June 19th. Kevin Bacon, Amanda Seyfried in this movie. I don't have a synopsis. Where the fuck's my synopsis? Where's my synopsis?
It's a haunted house movie.
In a new psychological thriller from Blumhouse Productions and legendary screenwriter David Kep, Kevin Bacon and Amanda Seyfried stars a couple seeking a restful vacation on an isolated edge of the world, only to discover that secrets demand a reckoning and travel with you. Ooh.
I like it. I'm into it. The Blumhouse sold me. I'm fine. I see Blumhouse. I'm like, it's got Kevin Bacon in it. It's got Amanda Seyfried, which, by the way, that's a pairing I never thought would happen on screen. Kevin Bacon and Amanda Seyfried married to each other on screen with the child. Never thought I was going to see it. You're going to see it here. It looks fine. And by the way, that house looks amazing. Like some weird ass brutalist interior brick house. I want that shit.
I think with a Blumhouse movie, you can either expect it to be slop or very, very good. Not a lot of middle ground there. So I think that's like in its own right, something to be look forward to. It's like, you know, flipping a coin. It's like a little gamble every time you watch a Blumhouse movie. And I love that.
You know, you're going to get something like, what's it called?
Like What Lies Beneath. Is it going to be What Lies Beneath where he's got a secret?
What's the upgrade? You're going to get a movie like Upgrade, right? Every now and then from them. Maybe this is it. I'm not saying this is Upgrade. It's very different types of movies. But you're going to get a surprise from the folks over at Blumhouse. Maybe this is it. Maybe this is it.
Yeah, I don't know. So the director has done David Kopp, I think. I mean, he's written Jurassic Park. Again, I mean, the guy wrote Jurassic Park. I mean, with Michael Crichton, obviously.
Which is a good movie, but not as good as The World, right?
Mm, right. No, I mean, can't hold up. He wrote Counterbalance, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. But then he also wrote Carlito's Way, which who could forget that? So he's got some experience. Now, also directed Mordecai.
Favorite movie.
But this looks like a solid haunted house type movie, and then we might get some secrets. What is it? Kevin Bacon had an affair, or Amanda Seyfried had an affair, or some of them murdered somebody and they're living in the murder house. I don't know. We'll find out. I'm more excited about this than Bill and Ted. And by the way, it's all there in the title of the movie. You should have left. I hope it ends with Kevin Bacon looking at the camera saying, I should have left.
I should have left there. Dun, 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 dun,
dun. The house. I'm just measuring the house. This is crazy. I mean, just wait until you get this. It's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. What? That's what he said in the trailer.
I know, but I thought you were setting up.
No, look, I wasn't going to go for whatever I was going to go for. I could see saying something like it's bigger on the inside than it looks on the outside, or it is on the outside. That could be a really lazy, hacky joke. I'm not going to make that.
Okay, I left you a moment to just reconsider. Okay,
we'll move on. I'm not going to do it.
AMC Theaters apparently, not apparently, they did. They reported $2.2 billion loss due to closures. However, other headlines also state this. Shares in AMC Entertainment jumped up earlier this week, 9%, their highest levels since late February, the point when COVID-19 started to decimate the global movie theater business. That's from Deadline. AMC not quite dead yet. As theaters begin to open or prepare to open nation and worldwide, minus likely New York. Everything with Tenet, you see, there could be a contingency plan if New York's not open yet. So, we'll see, but I can start tasting the popcorn a little bit. I just want some fucking movie popcorn. I'm craving movie popcorn.
Are they still beefing with Universal, by the way? That feud's still ongoing?
I think so, but I feel like once they open, they're going to be like, never mind.
No one's going to give a shit once everything opens back up. Yeah. We want AMC to survive this.
You know, when someone brings up something that you said a long time ago that you don't want, and you're like, what? No, we never said that's going to be AMC. I thought you didn't want our movies. No, we didn't say that.
No, they're just gonna look. We were staring down bankruptcy. It was truly unprecedented times, uncertain times, challenging times. Didn't really mean what we said, and we would happily take on Trolls World Tour 2, which is
Trolls World Tour.
No, that's already been on VOD. But when Trolls World Tour 2 comes out, we want to show that exclusively at AMC.
They're not gonna care.
It is Poppy funny because we don't get the gang back together.
I feel like we don't cape for too many corporations, but we want AMC to make it out of this pretty badly, right?
Well, it's not
actually,
AMC.
That's not
it's just
true.
It's
do
the
cape
concept
for a lot
of
corporations.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're shills. Well, I mean, there's things I will shill for, and it's not AMC in particular. It's just the concept of the movie theater, and without like, I mean, there are independent movie theaters which you should be supporting, but they are few and far between because companies like the one we've talked about have forced them out of business. But the concept of a movie theater, I'm fully behind. And
we don't want movie theaters.
I want them to stick around.
We don't want them to die. They actually opened up a drive-in movie theater kind of close by near my house here. So considering it,
I guess people just go to the bathroom now. I was thinking about like what a drive-in theater would have looked like in the early days of quarantine, like in March and April. Mm-hmm. And you know, you couldn't have a bathroom open, so can you just like hand out like piss tubes?
Yeah, you know how they have at the entrance.
You just have funnels that they hand out at the entrance, and then you just run them out the window of your car.
Yeah, exactly. And they're just empty water bottles for recycling. It's a dual use. Nothing worse than having to pee in a moving car. I hate it so much.
I just opened up this county's largest drive-in movie theater and piss basin.
If you're what do you call it, trying to pass a drug test, I got a lot of piss here.
Artemis Fowl.
the much delayed Artemis Fowl. Josh Gad is in it. We talked to Josh Gad about Artemis Fowl, but also a lot more than that. We got into like everything under the sun that Josh Gad has ever appeared in, maybe minus Murder on the Orient Express. So here's our interview with Josh Gad. Enjoy. All right. We are very, very pleased to be joined by Josh Gad. Josh Gad, thank you very much for joining this. We have to get into something very quickly off the bat because people are going to expect this from us.
All right.
There will at some point in this interview be a "you may hate us" question. So we will get to that.
Possibly.
We're going to warn you. Oh. We're going to warn you from the top.
Now I'm going into this interview thinking to myself, what's going to turn this relationship?
Well, don't worry.
Could this have been stopped? Like, had I said to them at the beginning, don't let me hate you, could we have avoided the conflict?
I'll tell you what, you won't be able to guess it. You're not going to be able to guess what it is.
But we're also, anything that we're accused of most,
it's going to be like really weird. We have your brother hostage. Yeah, I really hate you guys. it's going to be threatening.
The one thing we're accused of most is being Disney shills. So I think that might be able to calm your nerves there. At least, we're accused of that. So we can't be that bad. But speaking of Disney, Artemis Fowl dropping on Disney Plus June 12th. That is no small movie coming out on a streaming platform. And I've read a little bit about you. You've talked about the release of the movie in the last couple weeks. And I was curious, and I think I already know your answer and you can elaborate on it. I was curious if you were disappointed that it is going to streaming, but it sounds like you're not. It sounds like the timing of this, it's kind of a good thing.
I think if you asked me that question in another life, in another world, the answer would have been a definitive yes, I'm disappointed. I have nothing but joy over the fact that we're able to share a piece of escapism, a piece of joy with an audience literally stuck at home with nothing but helplessness and darkness surrounding them. I think that like the world needs an occasional break. They need an occasional opportunity to just have fun and laugh and go on a journey that only a film like Artemis Fowl can provide. And unfortunately, because of the ongoing pandemic and because we physically can't go to a theater right now, I'm grateful for the opportunity that we get to bring it to your homes. Like that to me is an awesome trade-off. And having said that, nobody enjoys the communal experience of going to a theater more than me. I miss it. Like, would I love to go take my daughters to see this movie on the big screen? 100%. But because I literally can't, I think this was a great option.
Yeah, and again, it's been kind of, I think what might be crazy too for you is that, now you weren't a part of this, but they kicked the tires on this. Owen Culver kicked tires 19 years ago on this movie.
I was a part of it. I was like, Owen, you can't release it for 19 years until I'm old enough to play multiple games. And I kept holding it up. I was a real jerk about it.
But I mean, production like 5-ish years, and this was supposed to come out last August. So I also feel like this has to be kind of a breath of fresh air. You're like, damn, finally people can watch this movie that was just kind of held off.
I agree. I mean, it has had a long, arduous journey, and I think it was great that it had the journey it had, because eventually it fell into, I think, the right hands in Kenneth Branagh, you know, as a director, I think brought such a personal history with Irish myth and lore that makes the movie feel so much more than the sum of its parts, because it really is coming from a place of authenticity in you know, the filmmaker making it. And to me, there's something about a film like this dropping right now in particular that I absolutely love, because it just has so many great messages, and it's got an incredible world that you've never seen before on screen. Much like Ken did with Thor, much like he even did with Cinderella or Murder on the Orient Express, he defines these worlds in such a visceral and unique way that you just become intoxicated by what you're seeing on the screen.
I've seen you say that that you've talked about how some of your favorite movies, Jurassic Park, some of the Harry Potters, like book to TV, book to movie adaptations, some of your favorites, but it's about finding your own voice. And I know that Owen Colfer too has been very supportive of some changes from the movie to book. That has to be a pretty big blessing, because I can't imagine doing a book to a movie and some things are changing, like you don't have the blessing of the guy made the book.
You can't, and it is always a trade-off. I remember people were up in arms when Jurassic Park came out, and I remember reading the book before I saw the movie, and there were so many big swings. I look back at that movie now as one of my top 10 favorite movies of all time, and I don't remember the book. And you know, similarly, my favorite Harry Potter movies are the ones that frankly break away from the source material a little bit to become their own thing, so that you're not literally doing a book report, right? Like, yeah. if that's what it is, then what are you, why even have that experience? Well, you know, I think there's got to be a little bit of give and take, and every decision that was made in terms of adapting this. And there's a reason it took 19 years. It's, you know, as simple as the pitch for the book was Die Hard with Fairies, it was a much different beast when trying to actually make the movie itself. And Owen really had a hand in those choices, and I'm grateful for it.
So I think I've seen like 95% of your movies, probably, roughly. Right. And I think, is this your first character that's essentially built around farting?
This is my first and hopefully last character. I remember reading the book, and can I curse on your show?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
Okay. So I remember reading the book and saying, what the fuck is this? Because I was like, wait, this character, literally one of his biggest attributes is that he consumes the earth and then like farts nonstop and deposits everything that goes through him out the other end. Like, how do you even go about doing this? So before I even signed on, I had the discussion with Ken, because I'm like, this could go wrong really quick. And he just, again, he has such a nuanced way of approaching everything that he really did know exactly how to handle it, so that it rode that line of being true to the book, hilarious, but never self-indulgent or crazy. And the way that we did it, I think, is pretty great. And I remember him showing me an early storyboard for it. And I was like, okay, all right, I get it. But yeah, this will probably be the last character that I ever play.
The last farting character. and then quickly, another thing out too, before we get on to our kind of our big thing here.
Our hateful
Central Park is streaming on Apple TV Plus as well.
It is. I've been so overwhelmed with the messages of joy and positivity that people are getting from that show. You know, Lauren Bouchard, the creator of Bob's Burgers, Nora Smith, his partner, and I endeavored to bring this show to life 2 years ago. And what we wanted was a respite from some of the sort of cynical stuff on TV, something that just felt joyful, something that felt like it was uplifting, something that felt like it infused you with a sense of like, oh, the world is a great place. It's a beautiful place at times. And part of that was, you know, bringing a full length musical to the small screen. We never could have realized that it would be coming out at a time when people would need that message more than ever. And I've been very humbled and very touched by the fact that in these really bleak times, there's this little sliver of light, not changing the world, not, unfortunately, not, you know, making a huge difference, but that at least gives you 27 minutes or more of catharsis, of joy. That's what I, as an entertainer, can do right now. And I've been really, really blessed to hear from so many people who have felt that way.
Yeah, I can't imagine. It has to be great to give like content that can give people some escapism right now. That's new too. That is new. I feel like this is usually the part I would imagine when people talk to you that they ask you about Frozen, right? They stick the mic, they get the clickbait headline ready. Frozen 3 blank. We're gonna go a different. We're gonna go a different route.
Yeah, so, gonna talk Frozen 4, aren't you?
yeah. One of my
make your own headlines.
You have a quote on the Stephen Colbert show. I'll paraphrase, which I love, is about you turning the voice off. And you're like, it's just my voice. Olaf is just my voice. And you like, I remember he asked, like, when you read your kids' stories, you are Olaf. He goes, it's me, but they're like, don't do Olaf. We have our own Olaf voice on this show.
Oh.
And it's, I would call it, Kendrick, a parody. Would that be the best way to put it?
I would say a parody. The thing with it is that we love Frozen, obviously, we're people with working brains. But we always would view the character of Olaf and we're like, what if Olaf was this filthy-minded little creep and like an internet commenter, yeah, basically. So we invented like our own Frozen parody that would be like, Elsa, let me smell your feet. And like just the nastiest things coming out of this parody mouth. And people get so mad at us for it.
When the cameras are up. Right.
Yes. Exactly. And every time we do the voice, we'll get 1,000 tweets, Instagram comments, whatever. Just like, I can't like now hear and synthesize the voice of Olaf without thinking of him as this creepy commenter.
It stopped doing the horny Olaf voice. That's basically what people say. People are, they hate it. And they just can't stop doing it.
God bless you guys. You're doing God's work here.
I agree.
It's kind of tight though, because because I think part of it was like just like some of the shorts and just the extra content. And like, it's you're part of that crew that is always asked, I feel like, I'm sure, to do the thing. I'd put Chadwick Boseman in that category of like, do the Wakanda Forever thing. It's like, no matter where you are. And I feel like you're just asked. So, but I feel like also when Olaf speaks, it prints money for Disney. So it's just, it's the raunchier Olaf. The Olaf who talks at any, because he just knows, like, I don't care what I say. It prints money.
I don't hate you. I love you. I love you.
Okay.
This is just music to my ears.
This is not your last Disney project. So I'm like, all right, did you hear Josh Gad talk about horny Olaf?
Okay.
He talked about horny Olaf. We got to get rid of him.
We'll move it back to the G-rated. Just as a note, me, as many other people in this country and world in general, I'm quarantined with small children who are obsessed with Frozen. And when they heard that I was going to interview you, they had two very important questions. Harper asked, did you ever find Samantha? Very regular question. Mm-hmm. And Arya asked, can I pull you apart / rip your head off?
Oh, okay. So I'll answer the first question first before I file a police report against your second child. I definitely have not found Samantha yet, you know. Maybe there will be more Frozen adventures for Olaf to find Samantha. There's your clickbait, right? And then in terms of your child violently tearing me apart, I'm not in favor of it. I like having a head. I like, and you didn't specify whether it's Olaf related or Josh Gad related.
I tried.
I feel like I'm unsafe now. But I would say Olaf definitely welcomes having his body dismembered and put back together again in a number of ways. He does it himself.
Okay, so you, more than almost any other actor that we've ever interviewed, really, you are constantly attached, I think, to rumors. Like, over the past few years, you're attached to rumors being passed in this and cast in that. Why do you think, like, you're just a name that people constantly throw to the wind as a cast? Like, Josh Gad's being rumored for this, he's being rumored for that. Seems never ending.
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, the penguin thing, that was me just trolling and having fun.
That became a big thing though. That was nothing.
It was so funny. There was a day where I went to Warner Brothers to have a chat with, at the time, Jeff Johns oh my God, the name is escaping me, but who ran it with him. And we even posed with a comic book with the penguin on it, just to continue to troll. I don't know why. I find it to be humbling. I'm honored that my name is bandied about for strange and wonderful things. You know, I'm somebody who loves to create. I'm somebody who loves to, you know, bring things to life. So oftentimes when there's something happening that's based on like a pre-existing piece of IP or something, and my name gets thrown around, I'm sort of the last one to find out about it. And then I'll get asked about it and be like, well, I don't even know what it is you're talking about. So I don't know. That's a truthful answer.
What do you think was the craziest one? What was the one where you heard it and you're like, what the fuck? Like, who even thought of this? Like,
there was one recently that was sent my way that was particularly strange. And it was to play a young, that I was attached to play a young Sala in Indiana Jones. You know, I was like, what
the really
fuck is happening? Like, why is there a young Sala? Why would I play? And what's happening? There's always weird ones. There's always weird ones.
Well, you were quick to squash the Phil. You actually got out ahead of the Phil in live action Hercules too. You were like, you were like, stop.
No, because everybody was like, hey, and I'm like, no, Danny DeVito's going to play that character or somebody mm-hmm. else. But I've been blessed to bring one iconic Disney character to life in LeFou. And I'm, you know, very fortunate to be working on a sequel to Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, where one of my favorite films of all time, where Rick Moranis is coming out of retirement to play my dad. So I feel like I'll leave those Disney reinterpretations to other folks to be able to be a part of.
That, I was going to ask you that at the end, by the way. That's like the Michael Jordan Last Dance of Hollywood. You have Rick Moranis coming out of retirement for one last, like,
dude, it's the greatest. I've been pursuing that along with my producer, Dave Holman, for pretty much like 2 years. We've been like, I've been saying, I just don't want to do a sequel without you. I just won't. Like, to me, it's everything. And Rick is such a mensch, and he's so funny, and he's so genius. And I'm so excited for people to be reminded of why he truly was one of the most brilliant comedic voices of our childhoods.
How far into that process are you right now?
Oh, we're very far along. I mean, we were in the depths of pre-production prior to the pandemic hitting. So ready to rock and roll whenever it's in.
I mean, that's like of like a thing to throw on your resume. You get, got Rick Moranis out of retirement. No big deal.
Guys right here, huge fans here. But so another Disney thing, Star Wars, this is an existing IP that you might be able to get your hands on. You know, you have so many ties to it with like the Daisy Ridley viral videos, which we love. Your celebration panel host, your cameo in Rebels, but no live action role just yet. And we want to know, number one, why is that? Number two, do you want to get, you know, dip your toe in the water, maybe get in the Mandalorian?
I would welcome any opportunity to play in the Star Wars world. Why is it? I don't know. It's one of those worlds like Marvel where it's such a broad world, but at the same time, there has to be like the specific fit that really makes sense. Like, you know, like the one role that I would love to take on is actually Doc Ock. Like that is a comic book character that I've always been obsessed with. Although whoever follows in the footsteps of Alfred Molina is essentially doomed anyway. But
they're gonna eventually need a new Doc Ock. So
another Indiana Jones. Yeah. Oh God, I just watched that movie again with my kids. Raiders. It's not good. It is the essence of perfection. That there is not a missed frame in that entire film. It's like Back to the Future, where it's just like every single thing has been touched by the cinema gods, right? Like it's just like perfect. So I don't know. I would love to play in the Star Wars universe one day, and hopefully I'll be able to.
I mean, I never forget. I was at the celebration that you hosted that panel, and I immediately went, "Oh, he's got a cameo in this," but there was no cameo. So I mean, we're for Josh Gett.
I was very fortunate though to be invited by the amazing J.J. Abrams to and Daisy Ridley to the set of The Last Skywalker. That was pretty tremendous when they were doing reshoots. Close enough.
So something
easy for us to say, just like, hey, why aren't you in Star Wars?
Yeah, why aren't you in what's up
why
with
aren't
that?
You in Star Wars?
Yeah, what the fuck? Why aren't you guys in Star Wars?
It's a good, very
fair
point.
The action figures.
That's true, yeah. So funny enough, the first thing I ever saw you in was not a movie. It was not the Book of Mormon. That's what I'm going to talk about here. It was the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. I saw on Broadway
I came to New York to see it, and that's a long time ago. And that's one of your first big breaks, right?
When I took over for Dan Fogler.
Oh, right. Okay.
Won a Tony for it. And that was around 2005. And I just was on the verge of quitting acting. I was going to go to law school. I called my mom to tell her this. I was sort of like done with rejection and everything else. And my mom started crying. And I'm like, what Jewish mother cries when their son tells them they're going to law school? And especially because both my brothers went. And she goes, I'm disappointed in you. You've spent, 15 years dreaming of doing this and only 3 years trying to live out that dream. And I think that that's a cop out. And that hit me like a ton of bricks. And I decided to put it on the line and go audition with nothing on my resume to replace a Tony winner on Broadway. And it just happened. And I was so beyond grateful and honored that I had that gift.
It was a wild show, like crowd interaction, like it, just the way that theater was set up. I live kind of nearby it now. It was one of my favorites I went to because you didn't know what to expect. However, I didn't get to see you in this. I think the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life is the Book of Mormon. it was nonstop like belly pain laughter. I didn't get to see the original run, you and Andrew Rannells. But it is still so funny. I know you said before, I think you had a quote where I liked where you read the phone book for the two of them, like that no matter what they make. But it's kind of crazy that this, like, we had Cats in December. Not that Cats is new. Cats have been around forever. But, like, still no Book of Mormon, like, movie or anything. Do you think, like, it's just so pure on Broadway and just the format that it's in that maybe it wouldn't translate? Like, why do you think that is?
I think Trey and Matt are so genius at creating, and they're not the kind of guys who like to sort of look backwards. They're always trying to push forwards, even with South Park, which is, been on how many years now, and they keep wanting to push new frontiers. So I don't know. I think, will there eventually be a Book of Mormon movie? Probably. Will it be identical to what you see on the stage? I would highly doubt it. That's not their MO. That's not what they do. Yeah. I think that they would want to create a new experience if they're going to do that.
Make sure all the characters are entirely CGI too. And that you edit the footholes onto them.
Exactly. Still, just one of the fun, and we only had one. I was actually very curious how many people would walk out of the auditorium. We only had one girl, one couple got up, was like, too much for me. And I was like, all right, everyone else stuck in.
That was my favorite part, is just watching, especially in those early days. Cause you got to remember, we workshopped that show for 2 years prior to it opening, 2 or 3 years. And so, like, I had lived with doing it for like audiences of like 50 people in a small black box theater as we were trying to figure out what the show wanted to be. And then we went to Broadway, and it was like a nuclear bomb just falling where, like, you didn't know if there were going to be picketers. You didn't know, like, if they were just going to be, it was really pushing the envelope and blowing up the envelope. And I was pretty fascinated by the fact that we rarely had those walkouts. We had them, but they were few and far between.
It goes after kind of, for any people who haven't seen it, not to spoil anything, it just kind of goes like, it's not just like a thing on Mormons, right? It kind of goes after every religionist, and it really feels like you are a part of like the comedy, like the roast of what they're trying to say here and what they're putting on stage. That was my takeaway, at least, why I felt like everyone could kind of enjoy it together.
I agree. It was, and I got to say, the Mormons were and continue to be great sports about it. Mm-hmm. Even going so far as to put an advertisement in our playbill, which has been there since day one.
That's amazing. Before you go, we have to ask the clickbait questions. Obviously, we're big Honey, I Shrunk. And we're also huge Beauty and the Beast fans. Personally, I like it more than the animated version quite a bit. And particularly,
I'm
not just saying that. I've said this since we started the podcast years ago.
What's going on with that Disney Plus series you guys are going to have?
So a whole bunch of clickbait questions to sift through.
You don't have to give us any bait. No, feel free to give zero bait.
You're encouraged to. Good guys. I'll give you a little chum. What I can tell you about Honey, I Shrunk the Kids is it takes place in sort of real time, 30 years after the events of the first film. It circles around me playing Nick Zielinski, Wayne's first son. And I think this is something I've never revealed before. Amy Zielinski, my sister, also from the first film.
Okay.
And let's say a series of events transpires in a city very much like the one you are in right now, Jeff. Things transpire that bring our family back together again. And it is, I'll use Rick's words here. The script is as good, if not better, than the original.
That's really big.
That's huge.
It really is very special. And there's a reason we brought Joe Johnston back. We want this to feel like the original. That tactile, tangible nature of that original film is so iconic, and it's so, you know, having just watched it a bunch of times again and with and without my kids, it really is a movie that not only holds up, but surpasses, I think, so many of the films that have become outdated from that era. And that's a tribute to Joe, who's just such a genius director and visionary. So that is going to be really exciting, and I think going to blow everybody's minds. And there's been a lot of sort of like, it's a this, it's a that. It's a sequel to Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. That's what it is, a sequel to Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
People really had no idea how to phrase it. They're like, it's a reboot.
It's a reboot queen call. I'm like, no, guys, it's what we call a sequel. There is a lot happening with the world of Beauty and the Beast, and most of it I cannot share. What I can tell you is I would not be a part of anything that didn't feel like it was as good, if not better, than the movie and had a real purpose to exist. If a script did exist, I could tell you it's probably the best thing I've ever been a part of.
Oh, wow.
From a writing perspective.
If it exists.
If it exists, if music does exist, say written by an Academy Award winner, I can tell you that it is some of the best music I've heard. But none of that I can comment on. So it's a shame.
You showered us in chum there. That's dang. What you just did. Yes, that was that was fantastic. I want to say, if you guys want to blow up a baby again, like in Honey, I Blew Up the Baby, go for it. It's
please do.
Still one of the craziest, like, looking at the list of those movies.
Such a batshit crazy movie. but it's still so fun. I'll tell you what I loved. I loved Honey, I Shrunk the Audience, which was...
Yes, at Disney, yes.
Disney, and I remember seeing that at... I grew up in Florida, and I remember going to Epcot, and that was, like, my favorite attraction growing up. So, you know...
And then at Hollywood Studios, they had the big, tall grass and the giant ant.
Which I did. I got picked as a kid to for that, like, you know, when they used to choose somebody, and I went on the beat. So it really is sort of like weirdly full circle.
That's crazy.
And I think there may even be pictures that exist of that. But the other thing that I want to say about Honey, I Shrunk the Kids is it's such an emotional script. I mean, the script is like, it has so much pathos. And I'm just so excited. I'm thrilled to be reteaming with my brilliant producers, Madville, who have been such incredible partners on it as well. It's going to be really exciting.
I just absolutely cannot wait. I mean, again,
we're so excited.
You start with Rick Moranis. I think that's it. Like, no, you don't really hear much more, but
you start and end with Rick.
Appreciate you have the insight. Yes. Last thing before you go, tell people why sit down, flip on old Disney Plus and throw on Artemis Fowl. What can they expect? Why would you tell people to sit down and watch it?
you know, I know that there are so many options right now outside your house and so many things to safely do around the world, like go party with friends. But assuming you don't have the option of leaving your confines right now, like me and my family, I can't think of a better way to frankly spend a night without having to even pay for it, if assuming you have Disney Plus already. It is such a joyride. It is such a thrill ride. It is so fun and takes you on a journey that I think really does feel like a giant big screen film, all from the safety of your own home and comfort of your own home. So I think it's a great way to spend this Friday night. And I hope that all of you snuggle up with your family, or if you're single, snuggle up with a bowl of popcorn and go on a thrill ride that I hope brings you joy and escapism, which I know I need so desperately right now.
Many people do. Well, hey, we really appreciate this. Was fun. You have a million projects. So if you ever want to come back on, feel free.
Anytime.
Feel free. We'd love to have you. Josh Gad, thank you so much. Stay safe.
You guys are the best. Thank you. You too.
Thanks to Josh Gad. He was great. He took it not just in stride, but thought it was very funny. So that was fun.
He seems like a guy who's really, like, I don't know, just appreciative of like being interviewed by just randos.
He's very, very grounded, like, which
maybe not appreciative, but just graceful about hearing the sexy Olaf voice.
Yeah, he's very, like, I think down to earth is the best way to put it. And for a guy that's been like obviously involved in like huge fucking projects and is like an icon to kids and a lot of adults everywhere, I feel like he's like us, which is cool.
I've always said it, man. I think interviewing Josh Gad would be 10 times more interesting than if we interviewed Tom, or you guys interviewed Tom Cruise or something.
Tom Cruise would give us bottled shit for sure, but still, I would kind of want to interview him.
He, I mean, he quote tweeted our tease of the horny Olaf voice, Josh Gad this morning. So you know what? Obviously, I think he genuinely thought it was funny. So that's cool. I like, you know, he can appreciate that. We posted it and there was a reply on social media about they're like, hot take. I think the Olaf voice is annoying. So if you listen to this interview, you know that we did talk to Josh Gatto. People hate the voice. And that is why we'll continue to do the voice. We will continue to do it.
Not a hot take to say it.
Everyone hates it.
Everyone hates it. Not a hot take.
But now that he likes it,
it's true.
That's all we needed. But if we get Bob Iger's stamp of approval, then we're just going to fucking run with it.
You think Disney has like agents that like work with their talent? Like check in on them.
There was one in, like, I'm pretty sure during our interview.
Well, yeah. I mean, media people. Well, not like, like check in like today, like, hey, what did you have for breakfast?
No, but I mean, like, you know what I'm saying? Just like, I don't want to say handlers, but just like agents. to make sure they're living the brand values. No, I guess it would be a handler, but just like, I'm a Disney representative who like works with people associated with top, you know, projects at Disney just to make sure their media appearances or whatever.
Disney secret police.
Yeah. I mean, that exists where we work with them. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. Well,
maybe not to the extent that you're saying, but yeah, for a large portion of it. Yeah. They're media liaisons. Yeah. They're.
Oh, okay. Wow. I mean, maybe it sounds like less nefarious than I was thinking.
Yeah. It's not quite as in-depth. I know what you're, it's close to what you're saying.
Well, no, I mean, just like obviously, like Josh Gad can do horny Olaf, but like I want that job at Disney because I want to make sure that I don't know, like who is like
doesn't say anything fucking.
Yeah, the guy who played the Rocketeer isn't doing horny Rocketeer voices on some podcast somewhere.
He's running an OnlyFans account. Nope, gotta shut that one down. Sorry, Rocketeer.
These rockets are so hot.
Blast off!
I'm gonna blast off.
Houston, we don't have a problem.
I'm the Rocketeer.
Make sure you get that line in at the end. I'm the Rocketeer. His famous line from the movie.
I'm Disney's the Rocketeer. That's what he
said. That's me.
Who is that? Didn't you see the helmet? And the fucking rockets.
Oh man. All right. Let's talk about sports. This is a Barstool sports podcast after all, folks. All right, we'll do Friday Night Lights now. Friday Night Lights came out in the year 2004, which kind of seems crazy. Kind of seems crazy this came out before 16 years ago now. Because it feels like it really is more recent than that, but I think the show probably makes you feel that way. Based off a book, based on a true story, Odessa Permian, high school out in Texas. Fun fact, their original field they literally moved the field and the stands to where my high school played while I was in high school. So that's my connection to it. Yeah, they packed up the turf, they packed up the stands, and they moved it to Cedar Park, Texas.
Why?
And we played there until after my senior year.
Why?
I don't know. I don't know. That's just the fact. It was called Bible Stadium, too. Named after a person, not the book.
Jim Bible.
Joe Bible. The guy Joe Bible. Bible.
I'm actually atheist. That's ironic.
Let me tell you something, Mac. This Jesus guy, it's all right.
Okay. Anyway, Friday Night Lights, directed by Peter Berg. Peter Berg directed this, and Mark Wahlberg wasn't in the movie, so that right there is shocking enough as it is. I think this is – we've talked about this movie before because we did a sports movie ranking a long, long time ago. We've done football rankings. I think it's one of the best sports movies ever made. I don't know if that's a common thing to hear. I think a lot of people love it, but it feels often overlooked a little bit. And we do have a question about this movie that I think actually raises a decent point as to why, and we'll get to that. A small, turbulent town in Texas obsesses over their high school football team to an unhealthy degree. When their star tailback, Boobie Miles, is seriously injured during the first game of the season, all hope is lost, and the town's dormant social problems begin to flare up. It is left to the inspiring abilities of new coach Gary Gaines, by Billy Bob Thornton, to instill in the other team members and by proxy the town itself a sense of self-respect and honor. I think this is not just a great sports movie, just a great movie in general. Really, really fucking good. Maybe it's because I like the dark story. I like it's a little more, you know, it's not as positive, not as uplifting. It has some uplifting moments, has one of the greatest speeches in any sports movie, partially improv by Billy Bob Thornton, mind you. He did not do that entirely on script. It's a 92 out of 100 for me. It's a fucking, it's a fantastic movie. And I think it's critically, I don't think it's critically acclaimed. It's well-liked by critics, well-liked by audiences. I think it's better than that.
I
think it's better than that.
I give it an 80. I like it a lot. It's very of the time. It feels very 2004. And what I mean by that is there's a lot of the camera work that feels very Bourne Supremacy or Collaterally, where I don't know, you know, like I don't want to say it's like
very
shaky
quick
cam.
Very quick edits, very quick, very shaky camera.
Yeah, I mean it's shaky camera, but it's not like Bourne shaky cam where it's used to distract you from the fact that they're not landing punches with the fight choreography or whatever, but it's shaky cam because it has like that, it's almost like that voyeur, however you pronounce it, style. Like, you know, it's shaky because it's your head and you're trying to like look in on a scene or whatever. It's stylized very 2004, down to the music, explosions in the sky, Austin, Texas, and I think maybe Midland band as well. It probably for me is the defining sports movie of that decade. And I know it sucks to put it in an entire decade because 2004 was a lot different than 2009 was, but I think it feels like the time and that makes it great. The interesting thing about this is it's a really great movie based off a really great book, but it is in my mind, very far from the book. The book was not well liked by Odessa residents because I think it tackled a lot of the issues around the town in terms of I don't think their high school desegregated until the 80s or their school district didn't. So, you know, there were race issues there. It's an oil boom town. And then in the 80s with kind of the bust that went on there, it fell into hard times. And the book touched more on those things. And obviously outside the scope of this movie, this movie was a very positive, uplifting movie, I think, about small town or medium town. Because, I mean, I don't say like Odessa is like completely small, but it's feel good in its own way, even though there aren't feel good parts, right? And that's what I liked about it.
I gave it an 80 as well. I think watching it, I've like the entire time watching, like, this is really paint by numbers. Like, I know it's gonna happen the entire time because I don't. Wait, I really,
you can you like, know you hadn't seen.
No, that's what I'm gonna say. When I first was watching this, I'm like, I don't think I've seen this before because I don't remember the Tokyo Drift dude being in it. But I think I definitely have seen it in school at some point because I remembered parts towards the end of it. But when I'm watching it, like the entire time I'm like going through it, I'm like, I feel like this is so paint by numbers because I know it's going to happen at every single fucking turn. But at the same time, I think that's mostly because this kind of set the stage for a lot of movies that came after it in the sports world, and where a lot of them took a lot of inspiration from that. Where it's, you have small, or like you said, Cheryl, medium town football or football town that's obsessed with the sport. You have the drunk dad. You have like the messed up mom. You have like all these things around the whole entire time. I'm like, none of this feels inspired to me, but at the same time, like I just said, I feel like a lot of other movies drew from that, and that's fine. But what really annoys me about this is, number one, they put zero, and I mean zero effort into making this look like it was in the 80s, because it looked like it was in 2004. The entirety of the town, everything, every way people dressed. I think the only 80s thing I even remotely saw was like a boombox at some point with like a cassette player. Nothing looked like it was in the 80s.
Booby was using a Walkman at the start.
Yeah.
That was the set piece for this is in the 80s. But yeah, when Under Armour's in it, you're kind of like, okay, well.
But not even just that. Like, nothing in this, like, the entire setting stage for it, I'm like, no, this, I would feel like I'm not being put into 1998. I feel like I'm in 2004. And it didn't really take me out of the movie too much, but, like, at the same time, that was a little frustrating for me. And number two, I really just don't like Lucas Black as an actor. I don't think he's a good actor. And he really should not, I don't think, have been the main role in this. But to oppose that, Derek Luke, who played Booby, was fucking awesome. He's really, really good. Especially the car scene with him and his uncle where he's crying about, he's like, you know, all I know how to do is play football. What am I going to do? Like, this is my entire plan for my life. That scene is the best scene in this entire movie for me by bar none. No question about it. Everything else, like I said before, it felt paint by numbers. But again, that kind of feeds into the point that, you know, this kind of set the stage for these other movies, like Imitations that came after it. And also, while I was watching it, I was trying to figure out why the soundtrack sounded so familiar to me the entire time. That's because the soundtrack is made by a band called Explosions in the Sky, which is the same band that did the soundtrack for Lone Survivor, which is a movie I've watched a bunch of times, also made by Peter Berg. So it all came full circle. But the entire time watching it, why the fuck does this weird guitar riffing thing sound so familiar? And it's because it's from Lone Survivor. A little cool little nugget that came out of that for me.
Peter Berg, also director of 2020 movie.
I was going to say way more specific.
Deepwater 2020 Horizon movie.
Oh, well, there were like three of them to come out this year. You think I'd be able to get one, right?
Spencer Confidential.
No.
That's right, Mark Wahlberg.
Among other things, too.
So, Jeff, this question's for you specifically. So I agree with your assessment, Ken Jack. Part of me was like, I don't know why they didn't set it in another time, because they took liberties with the story, but they also used real names in things. So, I mean, they had to set it when it was, but part of the setting was like, you know, Permian or Odessa or whatever the school was, they won the next year in 89, and that was a real thing. But Texas high school football, I think, like, when people think Texas high school football, they think of this movie or they think of the TV show. But when I think of Texas high school football, I think of these like 6,000 student high schools with stadiums that are like $60 million, like Allen, that are in like a wealthy suburb, like, you know, Westlake. And I think that's the interesting part about it is one, there's six divisions, maybe more in Texas high school football. So it's not all like, you know, it's not all a blob and it's always changing. But I think, you know, the landscape in athletics has changed a lot. And I don't think this movie could be replicated outside of the late 80s. And it certainly couldn't in the book, because I think the book touched on issues that were, you know, and the movie flirted with it, like with Booby and his uncle, and, you know, him not having football anymore was like, I think one of the themes that you know, it touches on is like for, what was the character? It's like the alcoholic dad. It's like, that's all he had. It's like this thing of like a Texas football high school stereotype of like, it's a generational thing that every generation is expected to perform well at football. And then after that, your life's pretty much done. The exploration of that theme, I thought, was pretty cliche, but done well in this movie. Like, cliche because it's been done in fucking Varsity Blues before. But going back to my main point, it's like, Jeff, when you think Texas high school football, like, what do you think about? Because for me, just like looking at it, it's not really like Odessa anymore. And no. This is, you know, this is someone not from Texas. It's just like, it's like the Allens, or it's the Westlakes. It's the like big factories. And I think this makes that story even more exceptional, because it's a, you know, it was a high school football championship won out in, like, you know, outside of these places.
Yeah. It's funny, 'cause like, there's a couple ways that I can relate and not relate. The biggest thing off the bat is the legacy thing. I was the 11th graduating class in my high school's history. My high school was founded in 1998. Our football teams were good. We were the highest division. I was there at the Big Town Cedar Park. I mean, my friends all played. It was a huge deal. Like, I mean, it was my friend's last game. Our coach, like Adam Dunn, former MLB player, and Adam Dunn and CeCe Sabathia were at my friend's last game in the playoffs that they lost. They played in this big gaudy stadium in Cypress, Texas. Same town from Sam McGuffey, former viral high school football player who hurtled over people. People may remember that video.
I kind of remember that.
Yeah, McGuffey, yeah. But so, like, I don't have that connection because I don't know what it's like to have that, like, long legacy. But that exists. To that extent nowadays, it's definitely more corporate now. And then when after I left, my high school dropped down from the top to one lower and just started destroying people and won two state titles. And so that whole run, like, my friends' teams were good, but they weren't up to, like, the tip top. So, like, I can't totally connect there. The truest thing to form here is Tim McGraw's character, because you get at least one of those. Like, that is some real shit. And, like, I'm not going to air anyone out on here, though I would love to do it. I would love to air out a name. And for, like, the few people who I went to high school with who listen to this would get a kick out of it. But, like, that type of dad exists. Like, he had dinner with the head coach last night to talk about some fucking Stanford football camp to go to. I may have just revealed things there. But it's like, that is very true to form. And I think that's what's so realistic about it. And, like, this is still a pretty fucking close thing to, like, what happens. And I think it's definitely changed since the 80s and that time. But, like, the really big prestige high schools that have been around for more than, at this point, Cedar Park High School, 22 years. Like, yeah, it's like, that's some real shit right there. But you're not wrong. Like, Allen getting their gaudy stadium and all this stuff. And, like, it's changed a little bit. It really has. There's a reason why they sell out Cowboy Stadium for the finals, right?
Yeah, well, and that also goes to show, like, it even illustrates in this movie how it's not homogenous. You know, with the Dallas team they're playing, and you know, the negotiation in terms of the game they were going to play in the Astrodome, in terms of, like, where it was going to be set, and, you know, who the referees were going to be. It's, you know, there are great teams from all over the state because it is such a large state, but, you know, this, it's almost like a medium-sized rural town is, like, one part of it. And I think the movie does, like, it does, I don't know if it does a good job of highlighting it, because I've never lived out in that environment. But at the same time, I think it, from what I've like known about the book, it does a good job of, like, on a surface level, being true to, like, the way the book feels.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's partly why, and, like, maybe there's probably a little bias in there from me because it is very personal to me. This movie came out, like, right around when I moved to Texas, and, like, you hear about it and, like, you get it, but you don't understand it. You move from Connecticut and you move to Texas where it just, it's a completely different fucking world. Texas high school football is, you don't get it until you go. You're like, what the fuck? This is insane. That's why nobody cares. Like, Austin, for example, they don't have a professional football team. No one cares. Like, you have high schools, you have all that type of shit. So, yeah, like, it's true to form there. That's why I personally connect with it. But again, the Tim McGraw thing is still my favorite part of the movie. I don't know what you guys think about Tim. Like I like Ken Jack, for example. Like, did you like the Tim McGraw character? Like, is that just me again having some bias so I can relate? And, like, I thought that was captured perfectly. I don't know.
Which character was the Tim McGraw character?
The dad.
Alcoholic dad.
Yeah.
The alcoholic dad.
That was something where, look, I
think there's shitty dads in, like, literally every sports movie that's ever been made ever.
Yeah. That's where it felt almost like a trope. Right.
And I didn't, it's not that I That's didn't fair. Enjoy it because it's, you know, that does exist, right? Like, abuse carried through like via athletics is something that's
they're
very
trying to
real.
Live vicariously through their own kids. That and that dad does exist, and like you just said, Tro, not even just there, but like in real life.
Yeah,
like everyone of us, I'm sure, has played a sport at one point and has seen a really shitty dad that acts like that, and not necessarily maybe is an alcoholic or anything like that, but acts like a shithead. So that part is real and very everyday life for everyone.
I think, but I think that lends again to why maybe there's like a bias or from, because like I think when you see that in like say like a basketball movie or other shit, like. Maybe you haven't seen it. Like, I kind of firsthand witnessed. Now, granted, the person wasn't an alcoholic, but like, I've witnessed that, like, overbearing, like, why the fuck are you on the field? Get back in the stands and eat your popcorn and shut up. Like, so I think because, like, it's so personal, I can connect to that. Maybe that's why, which again, that's what I was saying. Like, I'm sure there's complete, and like, I try to say this all the time. Like, I try not to put bias in these things. And so I'm just always going to have kind of a biased take on this because it's like something I can mildly relate to. On a small extent, which I didn't feel as much for the TV show. I never totally got into the TV show, which I know I recognize as a good show. It just wasn't my thing. I know people are obsessed with that show.
Is the consensus that the show is better or the movie's better?
I think it's the movie. I think people say the movie's better.
It's two different things, though, right? Like, at least from the way I understand, the show is more of a serialized drama,
right?
Not that this movie doesn't have dramatic elements, but this movie is more of a sports movie, and I haven't seen the show, but I'm just going off of like what I've heard from the show. But this movie is more of a sports movie in the sense that, you know, a team is one of the sports movies where the team starts off hot and they encounter troubles and then they come back and then they don't quite make it, but lessons were learned along the way and it makes you feel good.
I forgot how close, by the way, that in age, the what do you call it, Tim McGraw and Garrett Hedlund look in this movie. Like, they look like they could have been brothers. They did not look like a father and son duo just because they put the bald patch on Tim McGraw's head. They were like, yeah, he's a dad.
The Tim McGraw acting role was a big deal, like media-wise at the time.
Yeah.
It was one of the biggest talking points around the publicity tour for this movie, which, you know, like 2004, Tim McGraw is still huge. Obviously, one of the greatest country musicians of all time. But, you know, 2004 is Tim McGraw's time. And it was a big deal for him to be acting this role. And I think he did a fucking fantastic job at it. Like, given that he's a musician. Now, like, a lot of musicians can act really well. It's just talent of being on stage and playing in front of people, they do well. So it's not always a surprise, but it always kind of is a surprise when you see someone act well that, you know, it makes you feel jealous, right? You're like, oh, you're good at fucking music and you can act too. Yes. Fuck off.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Here's a good question. This kind of relates back to what I was saying before. It's from T-Hawk24. It says, putting aside that it's based on a true story, does the fact that they lose in the end actually make this movie better? And someone else also asked, does the fact that they lose in the end and it's more of a, it's not quite as uplifting as like a miracle, right? Where it's the fucking Miracle on Ice. Is that maybe part of the reason why this isn't like snap always like a movie that people bring up? Because it is obviously still an acclaimed movie, but because like it has a great speech and it has the perfect stuff, but they lose.
Yeah. It's, you know, a lot of this movie, what it does is it captures the feeling around, like it's being tangential to sports. It's, you know, something I think about like Remember the Titans or another movie where it's just, it's almost like, you know, you at the end it's victory or whatever it is. With this, it's almost the reminder that like life is going to go on for these characters outside of football after the season ends. And by the way, the next year they won the championship and the seniors weren't even involved. And that was an ending footnote to the movie. So like, you didn't get to see the championship run. So this is a great sports movie, but it's bittersweet in a sports movie that, when I say like how sports make you feel, it kind of takes you through, like, it's almost like, you know, the agony of not being able to play or the agony of watching your star player go down. It's the agony of being uncertain with yourself. It's the agony of living up to expectations or the failure to live up to expectations. Like, you know, there's sports psychologists that'll probably tell you like 99% of what goes through the minds of an athlete is
probably trying to mitigate negative thoughts around their own anxieties with the game. And the 1% is maybe enjoying the successes that they have. And I think this movie touches on a lot of those anxieties and those failures that happen in sports and then end up being footnotes on the pages of history to the eventual victors or the championship stories that you never hear about. So that's what I really enjoyed about this one is that it's a sports movie in the sense that, like, I think it's more honest to our relationship with sports than something is where everybody wins and feels good at the end and it cuts off with them, you know, winning. And that's the end of it, because sports is played around our, you know, our experiences living and is almost representative of our own experiences. And failure through sports is probably one of the most relatable feelings you can have through it.
Yeah, I agree with what you said. I also think that what they captured really well, and that's, like, I think my favorite just tonally the aspect of the entire movie, is just like that kind of not necessarily anxiety, just that fear coming towards the end of high school. And just knowing that, like, your life is no longer going to be like this ever again. And especially when the coach obviously says that in the speech, I know a lot of you are never going to, like, right after this half is done, you're never going to play football again for the rest of your life. And I remember my soccer coach saying that in our last game ever in playoffs. And I was on the bench, so it didn't matter even shit to me at the time. But afterwards, I was like, oh, man, that's kind of a big moment. But, like, when just capturing that moment of high school ending and knowing that you are not going to get this level of freedom, you're not going to get this level of, like, camaraderie, really, unless, like, you're going on to college and doing the same thing. I captured that, I think, very, very well. And I think that was, like, a really poignant thing when, like, you go back and you're watching this movie to relive and experience again. And that, I think, is the best, I guess, emotion that, I guess, Peter Berg was able to capture throughout this entire film by far.
The quarterback Winchell, was that his name again? I think he went to go play at Baylor. I mean, if you read on for a year, and then he left because it didn't feel the same as Permian. which I think, I, you know, speaks to the fanaticism around
winning
this football program. Yeah, that. But if you read the, you know, the biographies of, you know, these players, like, I feel like most of them ended up all right. So it's not, you know, it's not the Varsity Blues. Like, you know, this is our one chance to be winners. It's not like this is all we have. And that's kind of where, like, even though the Tim McGraw character I thought was a trope, it serves as a good juxtaposition to the son who's like, this is not all it. Like, I want to go on and do other things besides football. Like, this is just part of it. But yeah, you're right. It speaks to the finality of a chapter in your life, like, carried through in the finality of a football game and the finality of a football loss. And yeah, I agree with that. It's bittersweet in the same way the explosions in the sky music is beautiful but sad at the same time. That's the same way I feel about this as a sports movie.
We've been totally off the rails of the actual question. To answer the actual question, I think I would like this significantly less if they won that game.
Yeah.
Because then it would have been the trope movie, right?
Yeah, I agree. I think you're right.
I think there's a little bit to what you said, Ken Jack, as well. I completely agree with that. I think a lot of movies, sports movies, kind of, not all of them, Draft Day, kind of imitated this style and this feel afterwards. And that's why, your perspective, I think, is important here. It's like, oh, you know, this was actually before things started being like this. Like, this kind of inspired that. But it's. I mean, you guys kind of hit all the points. I won't just rehash what you said, but it's about character. It's very personal here. And I think, you know, while Moneyball is very different, it's not at all similar to this type of sports movie. That's part of why I like that one as well. It's a different element in a sports movie that makes it work. And that's, again, why I think something like Draft Day, which was, like, just not any of that, why I fucking cannot stand that movie, is because it doesn't have that character, that depth, that emotion that you feel with these other ones, and Moneyball, Friday Night Lights. And that's so they captured here. I think it's a great movie. That was kind of the main question, though, that we got from most everybody. And we had some music questions as well, but I think we've talked enough about how great the music is. So.
Yeah. Well, the music is, obviously, like you're saying, I mean, there's Explosions in the Sky heavily featured, but then there are also songs that they play throughout the movie I thought were selected very well. The one scene I wanted to talk about, my favorite scene in the movie, I, you know, like obviously the car scene was probably the most emotionally powerful scene, but the most intriguing scene is the coin flip scene, which has to be the most interesting coin flip in movie history, right?
What do you call it?
Would you like to make a flip a coin?
Yes.
maybe. We need to have a bracket.
You know, you can watch the real footage. You can watch the footage of the real coin flip. Not that like that's that thrilling, but like that real footage of the actual coin flip is online.
The other thing is Billy Bob Thornton. He was good, right? Like, was this his best role? Is this his favorite role he was in? Or you like Bad Santa more, Jeff, right?
Yeah. I would say Bad Santa, but this is right there. He was really fucking good in this. And he has an interview with, what is it, Rich Eisen, where he talks about how he was offered like tons of sports coaching roles after this. And he did Bad News Bears, and the other coach, Mr. Woodcock. He did that as like a PE teacher. But he joked, he's like, once you do it, you've done it. And he's like, I don't want to do that again. But he killed this role. He was really fucking good.
Can we agree that Booby had the worst Bill Cosby impression ever to be done in the history of the world? He's like, you want a pudding pop, Lucas? You want a pudding pop? I'm Bill Cosby. It's like, I don't think that's what he sounds like.
Yeah, that is not what that man sounds like. But I like the Nike and Adidas scene.
Yes, that was cool. Don't let that fly even.
Not the worst impression, by the way, because this is off topic. I thought about the worst impression in the history of a movie I've ever seen in my life. It was in Tall Girl when that kid impersonated Kevin Hart and Gordon Ramsay, Dunkelman. Yeah.
Dunkelman, man, I forgot about his fucking pins, his dumb pins.
Fucking TGI dunce. Friday ass.
Stupid. Fuck out of here. Tchotchkes.
What blew my mind the most about this movie is I had memory hold that final game taking place at Cowboys Stadium in Arlington. Mm,
you're close, kind of.
Not the Astros.
Professional sports stadium.
Yeah, close by like 5 hours. But
no, not geographically. Reason. Professional sports stadium in Texas. Don't be a dick.
And the player, let's see. I'm trying to think of there was a famous player for the Giants. I incorrectly identified him as LeVar Arrington last time, but he was some Winstead. I don't know.
So I mean, there's a couple people in this movie who play in the NFL. Ty Law was in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Played a receiver for Dallas Carter. I think Roy Williams was in the movie at some point as a coach. The old receiver for the Cowboys and Lions. I know he went to Permian. And there's actual high school football footage in the movie used. And there's a couple players who ended up being famous.
Jesse Armstead. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, Jesse Armstead. Yeah.
Yep.
Who is it? Oh, Aqib Talib can be seen playing actual high school football in this movie.
Yeah. So is that how they produced? Did they just film an actual high school football game taking place?
Some of it was real football. Yeah.
Them using the uniforms of like, because it looked really good. I mean, it was nice. The extras in the stands look full, and
that's one of my complaints. I thought a little over the top the last game. It was a little much, but that's it's drama. It's movies. It's, you know, it's part of it. All right. I was among many people who submitted an application to be an extra in the Friday Night Lights TV series, because despite the fact the TV series is based in, I believe, West Texas or East, I forget. They used my high school's district, so like my high school is in it.
Your haircut looked like shit. And from that day on,
my mom got a call back to be a substitute teacher or a teacher in the show, and then decided not to do it. Wasn't in the show. I never got the call back. So that was the beginning and ending of my acting career.
I do think the book though is one of the best sports books of all time. It's been forever since I've read it, but it is weird because it dives into much more about the town and the politics around the Odessa Midland split. Kind of, you know, one is more of a blue collar town and the other is more of a white collar oil money town. And then Buzz Bissinger is famous for being a shopaholic. Did you guys remember that GQ article? Wrote Friday Night Lights, but like I think he spent like $600,000 on leather jackets and boots in one year. And I mean, obviously great author, wrote one of the best sports books of all time. But unfortunately, because of that GQ article, all I can think about is him wearing leather fucking leather jackets, being a leather daddy.
give me something that says leather daddy. I got
to
go back.
Showed up to the premiere in a gimp suit.
Rest in velvet again. All right. We're going to do a draft, sports, worst movie / TV athletes. We're going to flip the rotation again. Audience first, Ken Jack second, myself third, Trill last, and then it snakes. Audience, they got their first pick. First pick, worst movie TV athlete. We're going to The Office. Stanley Hudson. Stanley Hudson. Dribbling the
first
old
overall ball. Pick.
Dribbling the old basketball. First overall pick, Stanley Hudson. Ken Jack.
Simon Birch.
Yeah, I knew Simon
Birch without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Killed somebody.
He killed someone with a foul ball. I'm sorry.
When that whole scene played out on the draft, that was very funny.
fictional debates on Friday night, by the way.
Why did they change the name to Simon Birch, by the way, from the prayer for Owen Meany? Some suit was like, didn't look like an Owen Meany.
Looks like a Simon Birch.
Like a Simon Birch
vibes from this kid.
That does feel like a suit type thing where you're like, call him Simon Birch. And they're like, really?
The yes. Test audiences love it, huh?
They love Birch. Sounds like a kid who's gone through some shit. Sounds like a kid who killed his
friend's mom.
Friend's mom with a foul ball.
My pick also murdered somebody, technically, from Not Another Teen Movie, Chris Evans, Jake Weiler. He threw that pass, and that guy got cut in half. Marty, I believe his name was. Guy just got killed. He got murdered on the field.
Destroyed. Great
bad team. Bad decision. Left his receiver out to dry. Jake Weiler. Trill, you have for last pick of round one, first pick of round two.
Sure. I'm going to take Billy Cole from The Last Boy Scout.
He
did PCP before a game and went out in the field and shot people. Mm-hmm. That's just bad. You don't want that on your team.
Yeah, that's bad athlete. Yep.
I don't want that. My next pick is Stuart Little from Stuart Little 2 soccer scene. He was awful at soccer and got kicked into the goal riding the ball like a little bitch rat.
Stupid rat.
He's technically a mouse. But not in this case.
That's a good pick. All right. My second pick is probably the most annoying athlete of all time. TV, but technically a commercial. It's the kid who touches the ball and it goes out of bounds and he tells his coach in the sportsmanship PSA. Do you know which one I'm talking about? Yep, he's like, Coach, I touched the ball. I touched the ball. It's their ball, coach. And then he stops the least realistic thing in the history of television. It's the worst. That guy sucks. And he definitely got
pass it on.
Yeah, the sportsmanship pass it on kid. Just inexcusable. I touched the ball, coach.
Horrible teammate.
That shouldn't be allowed on TV.
What the fuck are you doing? If I lose this game, I'm going to get fired. You're getting me fired.
I only have tenure if I get to be a coach still. Ken Jack, you're picking round two.
Halle Berry Catwoman from the basketball scene.
Didn't she dunk, though?
She dunked, but she was a horrible athlete. The way she was dribbling, you just look at the way she dribbles. Just watch
That's
it.
That's true. You can dunk and do nothing else. Yeah.
She would get that ball stolen by a billion people if it wasn't Benjamin Bratt and he wasn't just so damn horny for her in the middle of this square with 50 kids watching. It was basically, they were basically having sex while playing basketball.
Yeah.
Basketball.
last pick of round two, first pick of round three. Audience, last pick of round two, Michael Scott.
No.
Okay. And then the first pick in round three.
Is, a trend.
First pick in round three is Dwight Schrute. I swear to God, I was very nervous. One of you, I was so nervous. One of you would pick one of those because I was like, oh please, I wanted that to be the first three players.
Jim versus Roy. Epic matchup, Jim versus Roy.
We just got done 2 weeks ago talking about how big of assholes we are when we talk about The Office.
Why do I test the fire alarm response? And Kevin spilled chili.
Get in the ceiling.
Jim Vance.
Jim Bob gives Pam Bob a Band. Teapot. Wedding in Niagara Falls.
I can't believe this shit. Whatever.
Robert Christmas. Robert California.
California, California.
Robert Christmas. All right. Ken Jack, round three.
All right. I'm going to go with Rob Schneider and Benchwarmers because he just, like, he thinks he's a big shot for beating kids in Little League Baseball. He's not even that good. And I just, I know it's like a comedy, obviously, but you phrase Rob Schneider as an athlete. Sorry, don't buy it. Not one bit, sir.
Yeah, I mean, Benchwarmers, you could probably pick the whole fucking movie. Audience had it in their top 10, so good pick. I'm going to go a little curve on going a coach. Dennis Leary's Vince Penn from Draft Day.
Draft.
It's a horrendous, I mean, just awful talent evaluator. He's like, yeah, look at that right there. He caught that wheel route. He's to the house. Touchdown. We got to take this guy. That's our guy. He was open by fucking 20 yards. Look at
this. I'm an asshole.
Vince Penn. Trill, you have two picks in a row. Last pick, round three. First pick, round four.
Sure. So my third pick is a fictional Michael Orr before Leanne Tui taught him how to be good at football. Because he never even heard it football before in that movie. And then he heard of football, then he became an NFL player.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Whereas in real life, he played football. One of the weirdest choices to make ever. But he wasn't very good before Leanne Tui came out in that field one day and just said, no, this is how you became good at football. And then I'm taking Billy Bob from Varsity Blues. Technically good, but I don't want to put him out there because he keeps getting injured and concussed, and that's not good. I worry about his health. Also, rest in peace to forget his name, but the actor passed away a few years ago.
The actor did pass. Yeah. Rest in peace.
I'm going with my pick around for an Adrian Grenier character, Alan Jensen, the Harvard man.
I saw that when I was looking up.
Yeah, have you seen the Harvard man?
I saw it when I was looking up bad basketball or characters, and I was like, I don't remember this movie, but the fact that he ever played an athlete is hilarious.
It looks like he picked up basketball for the first time when they started filming the movie. It's the Harvard man. I forgot about the Harvard man, but it's truly horrendous.
Pam gets banned from Chili's?
Ken Jack, round four.
My round four pick is Hines Ward in The Dark Knight Rises. Yes, he scored. Zero spatial awareness. The entire stadium is collapsing around him, and he just doesn't even, like, stop. Yeah, like, hey, why is there fucking explosions beneath my feet? And nope, just didn't recognize it.
It would imply that he would run into or get blown up over the middle all the time by defenders, because if he can't hear the stadium blowing up, he can't hear a defender.
Who is the guy? The calls? Why was he returning kicks? No one knows.
Who is the guy who got him hooked up with that role? Because there's no way Christopher Nolan fucking cares about football, right?
Well, they use Heinz Field.
I know they're filming in Pittsburgh. They use Heinz Field, but who is like, you know what?
Heinz Ward has to be the kickoff returner.
We should get an actual Steeler as a nod to all the football fans we love.
Or Mike Wallace was in the shot. Like, Mike Wallace was their kick returner. Like, why not just fucking use him?
Dude, he was a fantasy football stud for like two or three years.
Oh, those years.
He drafted him like sixth or something, sixth round. Mm-hmm. Mike Wallace got like 30 points a game every other game. Mm-hmm.
I had him that year.
He returned the kick, and then they blew up Mayor Eyeshadow in the
Like that cut-in clip where Bane comes out and does the Dan Ninen bit.
Yeah.
Audience, their last picks of the draft. They're going to go with a character who I didn't know the character's name off the bat, but you'll remember the clip went viral. It's Robbie Amell's the character name from the movie The Duff. It's the guy who throws the football. That really viral clip. Yeah, where he's like shot putting the football. It's really bad.
Good pick.
And then Gordon from Dodgeball.
Which one's he?
Is he the glasses guy?
Elford Love.
Steven Root.
Yeah, Steven Root.
Steven Root. Yeah. Okay.
All right, it's a good pick. All right. I think I'm going to go Johnny Rico, Starship Troopers, because the foot play that he tries to do in space football, incredibly dumb. Like, there's a fumble liability right there. Fantastic soldier, obviously. Great, great leader of men. Should not be doing moves like that in the football field. That's just called being a showboat.
but he wins the game.
Yeah, but like, what if he got tackled in midair and he would have immediately fumbled the ball, and then it would have been returned by what was his name, Xander? Like, in
what if Jim doesn't over? Make that shot over Roy? I'm such life's an asshole. I love The Office. I'm sorry, I gotta stop doing that.
I mean, it's the most we just talked about this, but they put it on a fucking silver platter here by picking three Office characters in a row.
Gotta do a 30 for 30 on that game. Although I'm sure somebody already made that on Twitter.
Oh, I want somebody to make a Bop It that, you know, like a Bop It that just has like Office things on it. Like Casino Night. Casino Night. Just press the Casino Night button.
Or like a Simon Says.
Yes.
All right. Oh, that's me. Bo Callahan from Draft Day. If you put one good player on the field, he's a terrible quarterback. That was the moral of that movie. One good player, he's bad. That was
it's true.
Fucking Bo. Great name, though. And he has no friends. No friends either.
I was great hair and a good name.
My other pick was going to be Eddie Harris from Major League, the guy who rubs like Crisco all over the ball. You're not good at baseball. You're just a cheater. just cheat. I guess. Hey, 30 for 30 this weekend. Sosa McGuire. I am very excited for that.
Oh, me too.
I love speaking of sanctioned cheating.
Yeah, very excited for that. I don't give a fuck. No, I will.
Neither did the MLB. Then.
No, yeah. It didn't at all.
I mean, the MLB was probably. Well, I'm not going to say anything to get me in legal trouble here, but if you were a league allegedly. That just bled fan interest from a strike a few years earlier, in maybe a home run race wouldn't be the worst thing for business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I cannot wait. Truly, last pick of the draft.
It's the guy who has trouble with the curve from Trouble.
I knew that was going to make an appearance at some point.
Damn, you got him in the last round?
I don't even know, but all I know is if you have trouble hitting a curveball and that's your liability, you probably cannot be playing professional baseball.
It's bad. I mean, Trouble with the Curve is literally a subplot of the movie Major League. That's literally Pedro Serrano's character.
I can't hit a curveball. I was just throwing curveballs the whole time. Scouting report done.
In the prospect, John Hamm's prospect or whatever, he just didn't. He was used to cricket.
Yeah,
didn't know how to hit a curveball.
Was that all the picks?
Throw him the curve. Yeah.
I'm surprised nobody picked Ed.
But Ed wasn't bad.
Ed was a good player, to be fair.
Oh, that's right. What about the Cullen family when they played baseball in the brain?
What else did I have on mine? I didn't get picked. I had that Twilight baseball team, but they were actually pretty good.
True. You picked you mentioned Fred Chandler Bing, terrible athlete. Almost picked him, but
oh, in the Thanksgiving game?
Episode, he stinks. Yeah. Hey, Chandler stinks.
Who was the best athlete? Phoebe?
Ross. Ross. Ross and Monica. Stud.
Ross got those long legs.
Mm. Yams. Russ, a tennis player body.
He's got that Peyton Manning build. He's just out there. He's out there giraffe running bootlegs into the end zone like Peyton used to do.
Ross on a NFL Fever 2K5.
Yeah, famous.
Got to make that
scrambling QB Peyton Manning.
God, I wish I kind of want to download like WWE 2K20 and just create like custom characters like Ross Geller. Just
no. You should make Michael Scott. Jim Office and the other guys to do a basketball game, although I'm sure that's also already been done.
Hell in a Cell match, Michael Scott versus Roy.
Why? Well, what's their beef?
I don't know. They're just
now I want to know that story.
Oh my god, that's Jim's music.
He burst through the glass. He's doing the face. He's doing the face.
It's Jim with the season one hair. He's got the season one hair.
He's doing the face, people. Oh my god!
Season one hair. Michael Scott just hits different.
Oh, it's the Scranton Scrambler. He hit him with the Scranton Scrambler. He's broken in half.
Oh, Bob Vance.
First three picks of the draft.
Oh my god. Oh my god, Kevin's coming. Kevin's running down the ramp with his chili. No, Kevin, don't spit. No, oh my god.
It's all over the crowd.
It's all over the Titantron. Kevin has spilled chili everywhere.
Kevin goes to the top of the cell and throws down thumbtacks, then throws down chili on top of it.
Swanton bomb onto the chili. This one's for juggalos and juggalettes.
That's everywhere. Fuck this shit. Just jumps up. Holy shit. Oh, now we need, if anybody out there, Billy was doing this MMA, but if anyone has like the WWE game, please make this match. Can you edit in chili?
Oh my God. All right. Next time, Sunday, we're going to be talking to Judd Apatow and reviewing the movie, The King of Staten Island. So that's awesome. It's a new movie. How about that? And then we'll talk other new movies next week. We'll probably review next week Artemis Fowl and Greyhound, the Tom Hanks movie that's dropping on Apple TV Plus. Mm-hmm. Everyone's talking about that movie.
I'm talking. Me and my wife could not stop talking about it.
The best way to travel in a tube of farts to another given city.
My child looked up to me and said, "Greyhound." I said next week or the week after.
What smells like chili in this bus? What is that?
Kevin's WrestleMania entrance is just him coming out of a giant pot of chili with a pot of chili that he spills. Another one.
No, and he does it like Sting, where he takes the mask off and he has the mask underneath. It's just another pot.
There's a Gregorian chant choir version of his intro music. Oh, Kevin Spill. Kevin Spillus Chillus.
It's like a Russian nesting doll of chili. Oh, I kind of want to. We gotta write this up.
That should be a shirt we sell on the store. It's just two hands and a big pot of chili up, like right here.
Yes.
Where you can like put your hands to your side and it looks like you're carrying a pot of chili. And then you lift the shirt up and then it's a spilled pot of chili.
Perfect.
Why don't we sell merch?
That's
our idea. That's my idea. All right.
For Ken, Jack, and Trill, I'm Jeff Lowe. We'll talk to you on Sunday.
Have a good week at the box office, folks. So I hope-